Hey, audio listeners of the Variantcast, Mark Grayson, aka Invincible here. I just wanted to say that the only thing harder than trying to raise your half-bug brother is listening to an entire episode of the Variantcast without subscribing or leaving a review. I'm just kidding. One of those things is significantly easier. Anyways, back to saving the planet. Enjoy the episode.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Variantcast. This one is a special season 2 Invincible finale episode, so make sure to stick around with that, as well as Trent's review of Godzilla and Kong coming up a bit later in the show. But without further ado, let me pass it over to Trent as we get right into Invincible.
Yeah, so the finale of Invincible just came out, and Pretty crazy stuff happened. I'm excited to talk about it. I think we should we haven't talked about the last couple episodes, so we should run down the last couple episodes and feel like we should talk through it. So I think the last time we left off was right after Mark picked up his brother and came back to Earth, I believe.
Right. It was right after the break. Episode 5 and then 6, 7, 8 have come out since.
Yeah.
So we got 3 episodes here. And in those 3 episodes, it's been heavy on the relationship drama between Amber and Mark. And obviously, spoilers for the entirety of season 2. We won't be touching any comic stuff, but we will be going over anything that happened in the animated show. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah,
just getting that out there.
Yeah. So Mark basically brings his brother back to Earth and leaves him with his mom to take care of. So she's basically got that responsibility, but he wants to go back to see his friends, go back to see his girlfriend Amber. Yeah, he hasn't seen in a long time because all the fans been missing Amber at this point. So
where's Amber?
exactly. And so he goes and talks to her, and she's essentially like, it's like, yeah, I still want to make this work. So he takes her out on a date and gets attacked by a Viltrumite. Right in the middle of the date, and so not going so hot, and they essentially end up fighting a big kaiju, and then Amber after that like basically has to talk with Mark, says like I don't like being put in danger like this, so we're gonna have to think about this going forward. So
it's a real Spider-Man 2 situation.
Yeah, very very much so. And I feel like that's just basic, basic superhero romance drama. But yeah, no. And then so he essentially goes off and tries to, or he gets his shit kicked in by a Viltrumite. She fights off the kaiju like it's nothing, and then essentially says like, "Oh, I thought you were way stronger than that. Like you should have been able to take that guy by yourself. So this is kind of concerning that you're not as strong as me." And so, and then after that, he just absolutely gets pummeled by her.
Is there someone making these kaijus? Why do they just spawn in the middle of the ocean?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, this world be crazy, man.
Like I know there's like, you know, we got a little bit of it in some of the stuff in the Adam Eve prequel, like just, you know, kind of explaining how some people get their powers and a little bit more about the ground level world stuff.
Yeah.
Never is explained really where these kaijus come from, but it doesn't need to be at all.
Yeah.
just an interesting quirk of this world they live in.
Yeah.
That kaijus just be spawning in the middle of the ocean.
You can randomly fall in a vat of oil and then just become a kaiju at any point in time. So pretty scary stuff. But
could be dimensional rifts. Who knows?
Yeah,
you know, well, rifts and dimensions.
Yeah,
because they definitely explore that in the final episode. We'll mm-hmm. get to that in a sec. But Alan the Alien, who
yep.
You are sporting the shirt right now for the yep. audio listeners. We got big big Alan the Alien guy here. Oh, what does it say? It
says you're quite invincible.
Okay.
I think you actually bought classical. Me this shirt, Ty.
Oh, right. Yeah, we got each other like invincible shirts. I don't have mine on right now. Apologies,
good.
Didn't get the memo. no, I literally got off work and watched the finale and recording this. It's all in like one swoop. So
yeah,
these are very, very fresh thoughts that we have here.
Uh-huh.
But just kind of going through the rest of that, Alan the Alien, he's alive. I believe that was revealed when we were talking about it earlier, but he's way stronger, way ripped, and he gets in a fight with the same Viltrumite that just bodied Mark, and it's not really a fight. He's kind of doing a little rope-a-dope thing. He punches her once, is able to draw blood, and he's like, oh, damn, I'm way stronger.
Yeah.
And then he gets punched and he's like, oh, these are like little butterfly kisses. I can do this all day, but I'm not gonna because I need to save Omni-Man to have any hope of, you know, taking down the Viltrumite Empire. So that's what he does. He gets captured intentionally and they kind of leave us on that hang as we go into the finale. So I think this finale... I won't lie, bit off a little bit more than it could chew in terms of storylines.
Yeah.
And we'll talk at the end about the release structure, because that seems to be what a lot of people are talking about.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've been talking about it for a long time, but the more casual viewers that maybe picked up the show and then got to episode 4 and it's like, wait, it's not out? Like, what's happening? It definitely gained a bit of traction in the sense of this is the worst release schedule of all time kind of things. And I have some theories as to why, and they came up in this episode in particular.
Yeah.
But I think there was a lot of plot points. So I think the plan was to always have the multiversal, I'm blanking on his name, even though I just watched it.
Angstrom.
The multiversal guy, Angstrom.
Levy.
Angstrom Levy. I think the plan was always to have him be the finale because it was never going to be like the Viltrumite War was going to be the finale. They're building to that.
Yeah.
Like that's the, like that's everything. But they were building to this. And I think the way they did it is fine. But then they also had the, you know, Eve subplot of just, you know, the Mark and Eve, will they, won't they? And then they had the obviously Alan the Alien thing going on, and then there was
the Rudy and Monster Girls storyline also going on.
Yeah, like, and there's the Kate and Immortal storyline going on. So there's a lot of things happening, and I got about 30 minutes in, and like I'm having fun in these 30 minutes, but I'm just like, how is this gonna work? Because I'm like watching it and getting like a little bit increasingly frustrated because I'm like, they did say it's going to be less of a wait, but I'm thinking like, just like the amount of wait that it was for this.
Yeah.
And these plot points don't seem like they're going to get rushed, or they seem like they're going to, you know, just kind of be strange. And it does kind of feel like a couple of them are rushed, and those two being Immortal and Kate. And Monster Girl and Robot doesn't really feel like it's like there was a scene like between the reconciliation and like the being upset at each other thing.
Yeah.
Because it kind of just felt like it came out of nowhere during that training scene. Maybe I'm forgetting something because I watched it 3 months ago. And I don't want to be too critical of it because you watch it in a seamless 8 episodes, it's probably much more cohesive and probably flows and feels a lot better. And it's not a bad episode by any means. Just as a fan that wants more, it was frustrating to like, come on, give me some. Like, let's get going. Let's get moving.
Yeah.
And they didn't do that. But that's fine. They shouldn't rush these things. They should take their time. Because when I watch this back, I'll probably watch it back the full like series once it's done and be able to really appreciate it for what it is. And these complaints that I have now are more about the way it's coming out in the like more than anything. And I don't think that's a fair criticism.
Yeah.
Of like the actual media itself.
Yeah.
You want to criticize production. That's one thing.
It was also funny in the last episode how they kind of like took a jab at the like showrunners and the animators by saying like, oh, like sometimes a season two of a show comes out and it's animated way, way better because, you know, they took a lot of time in between the seasons. And I thought that was,
I thought it was funny. It wasn't a jab. It was a hook. It was a haymaker.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. It was a fourth wall break. And then some. It wasn't like a little cheeky joke. He like his whole monologue is just kind of saying it, and I think that's fine. Although, I will say that when my complaints are about like the length of this stuff, but I think like at the end of the day, that scene is gonna feel a little bit weird. In 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, because you're not gonna remember how long it took, or if you're a new viewer, you're not going to know how long it took. And there's not really any other fourth wall breaks in this show.
No.
So it is kind of strange that it was just that one.
Yeah.
But it's funny enough that I think the joke is worth itself, you know?
Yeah,
like,
no.
I don't think it's terrible.
No, I agree. So let's get into this finale a little bit. So
yeah,
it started off with, as you said, Angstrom Levy showing up to Mark's house and threatening Debbie and Oliver, Mark's little brother. And he essentially has seen Mark through the multiverse, you know, murder his family time and time again, like seen him commit genocide, seen him do all of these terrible things. And That was a pretty heavy scene, but especially the scene when Mark was just walking down that line of people, just chopping off their heads with his hand. That was pretty brutal. And you could definitely feel where the villain's coming from. Like, it's not a totally like, oh, this guy's angry villain. I thought that his motivations were actually, you know, like clear because, you know, what happened. I thought that he was like, although he did feel like it was kind of all fit into this one episode, I thought that his fight scene was really good, and I thought that his backstory and everything was really well told.
Yeah, and I don't know if we've necessarily seen the end of him, just with the way Invincible works. Like, if he's like the dimensional guy that's through all the dimensions, like, it kind of seems like there might be one. I know, like, the whole thing is that he was downloading all of their memories so he could save everyone. But, like, there's got to be one in a dimension that's, like, not there. So he's like Kang vibes very much, in the sense that it's like, okay, if this guy's like this dimensional, omnipotent being, not really how he's portrayed, but like he is smart enough to figure out dimensional travel, I think he'll probably show up again.
Yeah.
I'm hoping he won't have the trauma of that. So like, even if he is predispositioned to hating Invincible, I think he will probably come back as a good guy.
Yeah,
if he does come back. But I just say that because there's tons of character deaths that just aren't real character deaths. Just in this season alone, we had Alan, Kate, for an episode, we thought Rex, and Shrinking Ray died, but they were all good. No one on the Guardians died at all. We also didn't get a seen this season of all of the Guardians together. It never happened once. Which,
that's interesting. I never thought about that. Other than
there might have been like one little flashback scene where they were all together, but
yeah.
They definitely didn't, the feels like this season focused a lot more on Mark and the family dynamics, which is perfectly fine. It's called Invincible. So I absolutely think that's okay. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's more like little spinoff series like they did Adam Eve, like Robot and Monster Girl. I could totally see being like a 3-episode like series that they do. That's just like an offshoot in the time being.
Yeah.
But back to the finale, they were essentially starts basically explaining his motives a little bit and his intentions of just making sure Mark dies. He doesn't have any other quarrels with anyone else. It's just making sure Invincible is dead. And that's all he really cares about. And I don't know why. I guess he's fixated on this universe's Mark because he's the one that made him like this, which, fair enough. I would have liked to seen of him like killing other Marks or Invincibles,
yeah.
But we learn later he probably couldn't
yeah
do that. I don't think he was on that power level. But he is on the power level that he can send you to a dimension with talking dinosaurs.
Yeah, he just starts hucking Mark through these portals. And lots of different universes that he sends him to, yeah, including talking dinosaurs. There's a scene where it was like it was subtle, or you know, it was referencing Batman. He was talking to Batman on a rooftop over Gotham City. And then there's like the Spider-Man-esque character who was voiced by a previous Spider-Man voice actor, Josh Keaton, from Spectacular Spider-Man.
So I hinted to this earlier. I think this is where some of the production holdup was.
Oh, okay.
I think they wanted the rights to Spider-Man. I think that there is an alternate scene that this is animated as Spider-Man.
Oh, I 100%.
And I think, obviously, like the voice, the little line about like Mark saying, oh, it's hard to tell who's the bad guy, you have red eyes. I think that was added after the fact to try to make the scene more cohesive with the fact that he probably was, you know, saying some more like Spider-Man-esque things.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's credited as Agent Spider in this. He was obviously the Spectacular Spider-Man that aired from like in the late 2000s. So a lot of people our age probably got a kick out of that, even though it wasn't the actual Spider-Man. I think that was the intention all along, to have a little team up moment there with him and the actual Spider-Man. But
yeah,
I'm guessing the animated, because I know the animated rights for Spider-Man are different. So they probably thought they could get it done. Maybe too much money was needed.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like that had to play a part in the production delay, just because like the scene to me is so obvious, like that it's supposed to be Spider-Man. And I remember they were there's the infamous, I don't know if it's definitely not infamous, but there's the notable Invincible Spider-Man crossover,
yeah,
in the comics. So it's like a, and the social team was having a bunch of fun putting that cover in a bunch of promotional things. Like they were very heavily, very, very heavily hinting to Spider-Man showing up. And I think that was the intention.
Yeah.
Just didn't come to fruition.
Yeah. I'm satisfied with that small reference. It would have been cool if it was Spider-Man, but you know, I feel like they got their point across either way. The other notable Mark comes through the portal holding a Fortnite gun and hits Angstrom Levy over the head with a Fortnite gun, apparently.
I didn't even see that. I will rewatch that. That probably is
a better crossover than Emperor Palpatine being revealed that he's coming back through Fortnite before episode 9 came out. But
that was crazy. I'm actually playing after this. I'm going to be playing Fortnite with my Gen Z coworkers. I've never really played Fortnite before.
Yeah.
This is going to be like the second time I've launched it, but I launched it just like when I got it installed. They got like cars. They got like that. That thing is like the. It reminds me of like Lego Infinity or something like that, where they, or like Disney Infinity. Like, there's just so many franchises in that thing now.
Yeah,
I don't understand what's happening. I feel very old playing it, but I think this would probably hint to maybe we'll get an Invincible skin.
Well, no, he is like, I think they just added him to the game like a month ago or something.
I'm behind.
Yeah. So, this is just apparently like a collaboration with Epic Games to get in the show, which I thought is also a fun nod. But then after that he breaks
Debbie's arm.
Oh, yeah, he breaks Debbie's arm, which is savage, and
it was gruesome.
He picks up Oliver like he's about to do something to a child, which is pretty wild, and then it cuts away, and then he ends up not doing anything to him. But and then Mark he brings Mark to like a wasteland type planet where him and Mark duke it out, and Mark ends up killing him. And there's a famous panel that I remember seeing before the season came out of Mark covered in blood saying I thought you were stronger. And so that was a very pivotal point in this episode and in the season. And that's basically the whole climax of the season, and it's pretty crazy.
And there's a bit of symmetry there with the end of the last season when Nolan is beating Mark senseless and he goes for that final hit with the two hands, you know? And he doesn't do it, but then Mark does it here. And a lot of his internal crisis is feeling like he's becoming his father. But on the flip side, Mark feels like he's kind of becoming his son or becoming a human, cause he's really struggling there, in the sense that he can't stop caring about lesser beings.
Yeah.
But not to skip too far ahead, I just thought that was an interesting kind of like, he's not wanted to become his father. His father's upset that he's becoming, you know, more, you know, sympathetic to these things. So really is a interesting father-son dynamic they got going on there. But he kills him. And if you're paying attention, you're like, oh, he just killed him while in another dimension. He is screwed. He has no way out of this dimension. He just is, goodbye. But after about an hour or so of him on the planet, Portal shows up. It's the Guardians 20 years in the future, but I was a bit confused because it's his Guardians, so it's time travel, and this makes no sense to me.
Wait, that was his Guardians team? I thought it was them from another dimension.
No, that was his Guardians team 20 years later, and he said it's time travel. Because they said, since you disappeared, your world life has been awful since you disappeared. Like, life sucks now without you. And we need you to go back. But, like, the moment he goes in the portal, wouldn't they just cease to exist? Because, like,
yeah.
Or is it, like, a branching reality at that point? It must be branching.
Yeah, it must be, like, it must be a branch reality at that point. I just assume that they're from a different dimension, but that's crazy. It was interesting that Monster Girl is still alive, and Rex was in the robot suit. So both of those
was he though? Is that Rex?
Oh,
I don't think that's Rex.
Oh, I thought that some reason I thought that was Rex.
Well, no, she called him Rex.
Well, yeah, no,
robot.
When he had the helmet on, it was a different voice. But then when the helmet was off, it was Rex's voice.
Yeah, but that's because Robot, who is a 10-year-old version of Rex, is now 20 years old.
That's
30.
That's true.
So where's Rex? Because he would have a scar from the gunshot. And that there was no scar. It was just. And why does he do his hair like Rex? He's not Rex. Why'd she call him Rex? There's no way Rex got that smart. Also, he'd be older because Rex is like 20. So 20 years later, he should be like 40. And it looked like they were going for more of a like a 30-year-old.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have many questions about that.
Yeah, that scene was just pretty wild in general.
Maybe they could have made it less convoluted by having it. I thought what was going to happen is there was going to be another Angstrom Levy on that planet. Like, that was going to be the planet that we saw. Was that the planet that we saw that he was living on before? I'll have to go back
and
check.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I'll have to go back
and watch it.
Because he had, like, this home base planet that, like, all of him and the other Angstrom Levies took refuge on. So I thought maybe he was going to run into, like, the one Angstrom Levy that didn't want to download his memory or something, and he was gonna save him. But I mean, we learned based on the way time works that wouldn't have helped because it would have been like 5 years in the future. So really the only way out of this was time travel. I just don't know why they got it. I don't know. It's comic books, man. Comic books, right?
Yeah. That's the only way to explain it.
Sometimes it's just best not to think too hard about these things.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's a very well-written show that is very human for such a outlandish concept. It's very human, and it basically just uses these characters and these powers as a device, like every superhero thing does. But it does it in a really good way, using like these characters to kind of just display something that a type of story that isn't told too much of, just like father son not wanting to become your father. It's told, but this is a very different spin on it, and it still has the same emotions behind it. But something that did happen with the older Guardians team is Eve tells him that she loves him and that he needs to go and tell his Eve that he loves her or he doesn't love her so that she can move on because she's so caught up with Mark. So he does not that.
Yeah, it was like halfway, he was halfway there and then he just, he decided not to at that time.
Yeah, he just kind of pulled up. And I will say one thing, they did overuse the black eye in this. There's three or four scenes that happen. 100%.
I 100%
agree. Where, yeah, because he has a black eye on his right eye, and then his mom has a black eye also on her right eye, and they're talking, and they just both have black eyes. Then he goes, he still has a black eye, talks to Eve, and then it cuts to Nolan after, and he has a black eye, and I think on the same eye.
Yeah.
So got a little ambitious with the black eyes, I think. But they kind of talk and he definitely insinuates that, you know, there's something going on there, but doesn't really say too much. But I think overall, season three, if there is a time jump, I wouldn't be surprised if they're just dating at the time jump.
Yeah.
It's kind of how it feels like a left off, you know?
Yeah.
Like definitely. They were going
to. I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. And if not that, it's definitely going to happen in the first part of next season, I feel like.
Yeah. I feel like, I read the comics up until essentially the half season mark when like they were on Thraxon. And I was like, okay, I'll probably chill here. Because I didn't want to see like how Oliver like turned out. Like Oliver, I think, is one of the more interesting like plot points of this whole thing.
Yeah.
Like he's aging really fast. He's going to be talking. He's going to be a whole character in the next season. And he might have his father back because at the end of this one, we get a little stinger of Alan and Nolan talking. And he's basically... Like Nolan's like, I miss my wife. And that's how the season ends, contrast to season one, where he says she's like a pet to me. Now referring to her as his wife, and he's missing her. And he probably doesn't even know that she's raising his kid.
Yeah.
But did he meet, which wife was he talking about? You know?
I'm assuming he probably meant Debbie because he's talking about Mark, you know? But
and he probably knows the other wife is dead at this point.
Yeah, she's dead.
She ran.
She's long gone. But
yeah.
No, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Debbie reacts to that because she was completely over him until she got handed his other son to take care of, and then it'll be interesting to see what happens.
I'm interested to see what the people of Earth would, how they'd react.
Seriously.
Is
Cecil gonna react? Cecil's gonna be pissed.
Yeah. But what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
Like, what are you gonna try to kill him? Nah.
No.
I mean, you could try, I guess, but probably won't. And that's how the season ends. Overall, I don't know. I think I need to rewatch both season one and season two back to back. It's obviously good. I know that. Like I watch each thing and I'm like, this is really, really solid writing. But I think it, just to get into the release structure a little bit, that did take a lot of the hype out. Four episodes at a time feels like a little mini series, and that's more due to how I'm ingesting that content. So I don't, like I said, it's not a reflection of the media, but in terms of like it feeling like a full product, it just feels a little weird because of that. But I don't think it's something that is like attached in any way to the show. I think it's, if they can get their animation schedule down and get season three out in a year, the full season without any breaks, I think everyone will just be right back on board and ready to go for an Invincible season three, four, however many you want to do.
Yeah. I'm hoping for season three around like October, November this year. That's when I expect it to release.
This year?
They said it's not going to be long, so
I think it's going to be
this year.
I think it's going to be summer of 2025. That would be my bet. But you know, if it's this year, I'll be happy. That's for sure. Because I want more, and I'm not going to fault the show and say anything is bad just because I want more, you know?
Yeah.
What they gave me was solid, good, great, even, and I enjoyed it thoroughly, and I looked forward to every week it was coming out on Thursday or Wednesday at midnight to watch it as, you know, as soon as I could. So
yeah,
I have mixed feelings about that aspect. I don't think that that's a thing that will last, and it very much will stand on its own as, I think, one of the best pieces of superhero content to this point.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those shows that I feel like I could watch every week. Like, I could watch a new episode every week until the end of time. But it also, like, yeah, when it's not on, it just feels like there's a void left because you know, it's not on. So, yeah, very much looking forward to season three. And might read the comics to catch up to at least this point a little bit.
I want to read the comics so bad. That's the problem. It's like I'll wait a couple months and see like if they announce any season three stuff.
Yeah.
But if it's gonna be another year plus, I'm just reading the comics. I just need to know at a certain point.
Yeah.
I like, it's gonna drive me insane. And I'm the type of person that spoilers don't really bother me, but like, I've had such a good time watching Invincible that I am like shielding myself from that. And I don't normally shield myself from that kind of stuff. This is like the one show that I do. But I'm getting very much to that point that I just need to know what happens next.
Yeah.
But we'll give him some time. We'll give him some time.
Yeah. What you don't need time for is in between the MonsterVerse movies, Warner Brothers, because it seems like they're just pumping those things out.
Yeah, there is more Godzilla movies than there is something that there's a lot. There's more Godzilla movies than there is Ghostbusters movies. So
yeah, that's pretty crazy. And so yeah, I went and saw Godzilla Kong yesterday, and
I think there might be more Godzilla movies where he fights Kong than there is Ghostbuster movies. if we count like all the Japanese only stuff. Anyways,
on
to your point.
So I had a fun time in this movie. It was after Godzilla Kong, they left off. They fought a Mecha Godzilla in the last one. They basically did a Justice League or a Dawn of Justice and teamed up at the end and took down Mecha Godzilla, and both parted their separate ways after not really fucking with each other, Godzilla and Kong. So Godzilla, when we see him in this movie starting off, he's essentially, you know, roaming Earth, just essentially like taking out any monsters that spawn up. So he's sleeping in the Colosseum. He's just, you know, he's just napping there. And then whenever something pops up in Rome or whatever, he'll just go over there, beat the shit out of him. And then he'll fuck off back to the Colosseum. So I thought that was a funny concept. But so Kong, on the other hand, is down in below Earth. There's like a, you know, like a an area, like an inner core of Earth where all of the dwellers of ancient times live. So Kong is essentially down there. He's looking for anyone of his own kind, because he's never seen a Kong that is his own species. So he's being a sad boy, laying just chilling down in the middle Earth. And then he eventually finds like a rift opening in the core Earth that goes even deeper into Earth. So in the last one, they're like, we got to go deeper into the Earth. And then in this one, it just seemed like they're like, all right, we got to go even deeper. So Kong jumps down there.
See how deep it goes.
And this is where all the Kongs live. And so,
wait, deep in the Earth?
Yeah. So deep. So like there's another section of the Earth below, right. It's not called Middle Earth, but I'm just going to call it Middle Earth, even though that's from Lord of the Rings. Yeah. But below Middle Earth is this area where it's all these Kongs that are being, you know, they're essentially slaves to this dude whose name is Scar King. And he's like this really brutal looking Kong, who's, you know, all scarred up and everything, and he's got like this this chain that's like a spine or something. But you know, just typical MonsterVerse stuff. But so Kong realizes that, he goes back up to the surface to get Godzilla, because the dude down below, he's got his own version of Godzilla, like a frost giant or something that's got like, you know, similar to Godzilla's powers, where he can like power up and then shoot a laser at you or something. And so he goes back up to get Godzilla, and he's like, I know we're not, he's essentially like, you know, we're not on the best terms, but he'll help me fight this dude. So Kong shows up to the pyramids in Egypt, and Godzilla sees him from, you know, across the ocean. So he just beelines for him, and then he doesn't see him across the ocean, but he senses him, you know. So he beelines towards Egypt, and he essentially just tackles him through the pyramid. So essentially,
I saw that clip.
Yeah. So
that
the whole movie is essentially like a bunch, like Godzilla, he's essentially just been watching some WWE. Like he put, like he did like a, like a, like, you know, threw Godzilla on his back, and that was pretty sick. And then in the opening, he was like fighting like a giant crab or something, and he was like he's like literally just doing some WWE moves on him. It was pretty sick. But there was this part where Kong apparently had like a cavity or something, or he had like tooth rot in his tooths. So they have to sedate him, and they have to put like a metal tooth in him. And so when he goes down to like the below Middle Earth, like he gets mocked because he has a metal tooth, and then people are like all the monkeys are like pointing at him and laughing at him. And so he's essentially, you know, being outcast, except for this little tiny monkey who you've probably seen on the in the ads. He's like a little tiny red monkey who shows up, and he's essentially the only one who is on Kong's side. And he at the very end, he helps Kong take out, I think they're his own kind. It seemed like there's some like a few different version of Kong, but so it's essentially this baby Kong, King Kong, and Godzilla all fighting against, you know, this army of Kongs with this with the Scar King guy. But and then at the very end, you know, in typical fashion, another monster shows up to then defeat the Scar King and make Godzilla calm down, because you know, Mothra is the queen of the monsters and Godzilla is the king of the monsters. But
right,
no, overall it was you know what you're getting with these movies. It's a MonsterVerse movie, and I couldn't really tell you a single human character name in it. There's Dan Stevens, he's in it. He's pretty good in it. David Tyree Henry, who was in Bullet Train, he was in it. He's pretty good in it. But I could not tell you a single person's name in it, because really you just show up for these movies just to see Lizard punch monkey. And at the end of the day, that's what they did. And they did do some things like differently from the last movies that I thought were cool. Like there was a fight that took place in zero gravity for whatever reason. Like they somehow turned off the gravity in the below Middle Earth. And so like Godzilla and Kong and Scar King were all fighting in zero gravity. So I thought that was pretty interesting, even though, you know, didn't really make sense. And now thinking about it, like, you know, like the weights of all of them, I guess down there, like their weights are all proportional because they're all giant beings. But but yeah, so there's a fight in zero gravity, so that was pretty cool. And then Godzilla's pink now. He turned from blue, and then he ate like a pink monster, so now he's pink now. So overall, I'll give it a 2.5 out of 5.
It's funny. Movies are funny because like you're expected to just rate them all out of like 5 or 10 or whatever your rating scale is. But then there's just movies that are just unlike other movies. Like, I don't know. It's wild that we rate something like Godzilla v. Kong on the same scale as we would rate like Zone of Interest. It's just like so different of mediums, but they're both movies. So, hey, it's letterbox time.
Yep.
I mean, it sounds interesting. It kind of sounds like all the good parts about Transformers, and I've seen all the Transformers. I haven't quite gotten into the MonsterVerse yet. But the good parts about Transformers are them just doing cool shit, which you don't get a lot in the later films. And that's really the reason people were going to those, and probably why they stopped going to those. They got boring, but it seems like people are still going to these. And obviously they have a strong overseas presence, and sounds like for the most part, they're pretty low on dialogue. So it can be adapted pretty easily to other markets without alienating anything. And so I don't think that there's any chance these ever don't make money. So, you know, keep doing it. It doesn't hurt anyone. It has its fans. And I don't care. I do find it interesting, though, that there's not the same kind of outcry about these as there was about, like, Marvel movies at their peak. Like, we just had two Godzilla movies drop within 6 months. Like, that's wild.
Well, I mean, like, this one was a Warner Brothers, like, American Godzilla movie, and the other one was a Japanese production. So, like...
I see.
So, they're not in the same universe, I guess. It's a different
Venom Spider-Man situation.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like when people attribute the Sony movies to the MCU, which happens a lot. They just kind of attribute all of, you know, any... Kraven the Hunter, a lot of people think is an MCU thing for some reason.
Yeah.
But yeah, I will eventually get through those movies. It sounds like a good time with some drinks, some friends, and just watch some monsters fighting. And would you recommend it to people, like, let's say they've just never seen a MonsterVerse film? Should they start with this one, or should they start with a different one?
I think you could go into this one without having seen it. I think it does a good job of explaining it. But my favorite of the universe is Kong Skull Island, which I think is like a great starting point and just a great movie in general.
Cool. All right. Well, we got a bit of news, and then we'll get out of here. Right about that mark, yeah. Real quick, I was on the IMDb page for Invincible, looking at, like, Josh Keaton, so I can make sure I quoted the right, like, TV series. And I found a user list, because those are things that happen on IMDb, of a live-action Ben 10 fan cast from 5 years ago. So I'm going to go through this. So if you guys don't know what Ben 10 is, it's just like a 10 to 16-year-old kid that gets a watch called the Omnitrix, and he gets to turn into different aliens, and he's like a superhero. It would be cool if Ben 10 got put in, like, a universe, like Image Comics, like, bought up the Ben 10 rights and was like, put him in the Invincible universe, or like, yeah. DC, like, let's get him in a universe, you know? Anyways, Tom Holland as Ben Tennyson, that's what we want. And then Sadie Sink as Gwen Tennyson, those are solid outside of Tom Holland. I mean, I guess it's fine. Tom Selleck as Grandpa Max, Leo Howard as Kevin Levin. And the rest of these, I don't remember who these characters are, but I see John Cena as Tetrax Shard. Oh, I think that's the diamond dude. Like, there's a guy made of diamond. Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. That Robert Downey Jr. is Asmuth. Heck yeah. I don't know who Asmuth is, but sick. Anyways, let's get into some news here. Get this pulled up.
I have a couple news headlines while you pull those up, Ty. So
I already got it pulled up, but go ahead and hit it, Trent.
We have our Silver Surfer. So Marvel has Marvel has officially cast Julia Garner as Silver Surfer. So we are getting a woman Silver Surfer, which is apparently Marvel wanted Anya Taylor-Joy and as the lead role, but she either did not want to do it or because of scheduling conflicts, but yeah, so we have a Silver Surfer, and apparently Galactus is going to be one of the main villains of Fantastic Four.
So Silver Surfer is going to be in the Fantastic Four movie?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, this makes sense. She was in Riverdale. No, she was not. She was born in the Riverdale neighborhood of the Bronx. she was in Perks of Being a Wallflower, as well as Sin City and Ozark, which she is probably most known for her role in Ozark. But been in, like, stuff like Robot Chicken. There's not, like, a big... I think Anna Taylor-Joy was would probably be like a bigger name for sure.
Yeah.
But you know, from what I remember and the stuff that I saw her in, I watched her in Perks of Being a Wallflower. She was good. She's 30, which is kind of surprising. But I think why this was most likely done, and I'm a bit is just to balance out like the cast in terms of like the men and women, because it's like Doctor Doom, and then there's three men on the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And then now you have pretty much all of the leads and supporting are all men, and Galactus will presumably be a male. So it does make sense in terms of that. And I don't think that his, like, Silver Surfer's gender is integral to the character.
No.
I'm sure with this news, you're getting a lot of people that are acting like they're the biggest Silver Surfer fans in the world. I would like just one of them to show me like a Silver Surfer comic, because I've just never seen a Silver Surfer comic. I know they exist.
I have actually read a few Silver Surfer comics, and actually am a fan of Silver Surfer. he is a pretty cool character, and I agree though he or she is not gender dependent, and I think that Marvel knows what they're doing. Hopefully,
I would prefer the girl that played Soul Surfer, as she has a bit more experience on a surfboard. But you know, I understand. I get it. It's okay. Do you got anything else, or?
I got some that you'll probably read off. Kirsten Dunst says that she would have returned for Spider-Man No Way Home, but she was never asked.
Oh,
so
I mean,
I feel like she didn't really, I feel like she didn't really fit into the movie that well. I guess maybe if they wanted to do like a post credit scene or something of, you know, checking back into the universes, but that was really the only time I could have seen her show up in the movie, I feel like.
I mean, I was doom scrolling some YouTube shorts and I stumbled across this interview with Andrew Garfield when he was doing the press tour about like, oh no, I'm not in the movie. And this interview was from after the movie released and he's finally able to tell people, and he's like, he was talking about how he didn't tell like Emma Stone that he was in the movie.
Yeah.
Just like didn't tell her. So I'm assuming she didn't get asked either. It seems very much like they were only focused on the villains and the Spider-Man. They weren't looking to delve into the lives.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing the reason is they did not want to close those books. They didn't want to write anything in that they may want to change later. Because if they show her and Peter still together, then they have to still be together, or they have to write away. And it feels very much like Spider-Man 4 is going to happen. I feel like it's going to happen. I think it's going to just straight up be Spider-Man 4. And it's going to be like a grounded thing. I think they're going to do that. It's just, why wouldn't you? It doesn't take that much money to make one of those Spider-Man films. I mean, it takes a lot, but it's pretty much the same as you're already paying to make Morbius. You know, it's not not a huge deal. So I think we will get Spider-Man 4, and for that reason, they probably didn't want to write themselves into any corners, have to deal with any retcons. Like, let's just leave it as open as possible. And that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And also, like, you know.
Yeah. On that note, Sam Raimi says that he would love to direct Avengers Secret Wars. They haven't asked me. I hope they do.
Mm. I would like that. I know his first outing with the MCU wasn't the best, but I also don't think that the project that he was given was the best. And I actually quite like Multiverse of Madness, outside of a few story points that I just kind of feel are unnecessary. Like, I don't think America Chavez is like a necessary character in that. And I think that does kind of like, I understand that she's kind of the plot device to move universes, but you could have made like a spell do that. I think I would have just liked it a bit more focused on strange.
Yeah.
But overall, I really liked the directing in that movie. A lot of the things that I saw some people clowning in terms of effects, I actually really liked. But I like a lot of the cheesier Sam Raimi stuff. A lot of the like horror, like pseudo horror comedy stuff that he does, I love that. And I would like, you know, to see. It wouldn't be my first choice. Not my first choice at all. But they need a name attached to this, and I'm interested to see what name they get. They're being careful about it, and I'm excited.
Yeah, the only
see the name.
Yeah, I think that the only worry that I have is I don't know if the Avengers as a whole fits his directing style, like directing every single one of those characters. But I guess it could work if it's paired with, if it's like a two-part movie that's paired with something that either sets it up really well or it follows it really well. Yeah, it all just depends on what, if they let him cook or not.
I think that's a great point, because like even in those Community episodes that the Russo brothers directed, you could see a semblance of, okay, if you gave these guys some money, they could really cook here.
Yeah.
And like just the way they were able to write a group of characters like the study group, it did translate really well. Even if it's a completely different tone, just the scale of that is just different. The character scale. I think that's a good point in the sense of we did see him struggle in Multiverse of Madness when it felt like they, you know, kept throwing characters and characters on.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming a lot of that was Marvel's doing, wanting, you know, these different characters in it. And I think he did the best with what he could. So I think that's a solid point. Whoever they choose is who they choose.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
That
is all I have.
Yeah. I mean, there hasn't been much. There's been a lot of Punisher stuff as the Daredevil Born Again is filming, and John Bernthal will be making his triumphant return to the MCU, and I think they definitely need this kind of return to street level. And it's got to be good. It's got to, you know, just be a, you know, solid, gritty. It's got to be gory because that's what people want. And from the stills that, you know, are being dropped through the news, he is covered in blood in pretty much all of them. So you could rest assured he'll be covered in blood as if he were a Baldur's Gate 3 character. Then we got Drew Goddard. Why do I recognize that name? I know it's a director. One sec. Drew Goddard. He directed The Good Place, The Cabin in the Woods, Daredevil, The Cloverfield Paradox. Yeah. The Martian. He is going to be writing Matrix 5. For Warner Bros. And he dropped out of directing Spider-Man 4. Didn't know he was going to be directing Spider-Man 4, but I guess he was, and he dropped out. I don't know why they wouldn't just give that to the guy that's directed all the Spider-Man so far. Maybe he doesn't want it, but...
Well, I think that he was going to do Fantastic Four, but then he left Fantastic Four to do Spider-Man 4, or no, to do Avengers 5.
Mm.
And then he got, I don't think he's doing that anymore. And so yeah, he'll probably will just go back to doing Spider-Man.
Hey, turn up. They dropped a first look at Christian Bale as Frankenstein's monster. So he's looking pretty good. It looks solid. They got the stitches in the head like you would assume. And, you know, he's Christian Bale, so I'm sure he's hasn't eaten for like 3 weeks or something, or only eaten for 3 weeks, one of the two. And apparently that's going to be in Maggie Gyllenhaal's The Bride. So be a movie more centered around the Bride of Frankenstein. And that kind of reminds me of the Dark Universe, because I think The Bride of Frankenstein was supposed to be a movie in the Dark Universe. So maybe this is the same project and it's zombie form. I don't know if this is a Universal film or not. Probably not. Dune Messiah is in development. Legendary will be the conclusion of the Dune trilogy. I mean, what does that mean? Not like the first half, but the last half. Of course, it's the conclusion of the Dune trilogy. It's the third one. But like that, I'm not convinced they're gonna stop making Dune.
I think like, they are. They might do like a mini,
really.
They might try to do like a mini series or something afterwards. But I think that they'll be done making movies, because between Dune Messiah and the next book, there's like 300 years or something time jump. So like basically done with the story of those characters. So I think that it makes sense that there's only one more movie.
Nice. All right. And then there was some leaked first looks at Mufasa the Lion King releasing in theaters on December 20th. Now, I am not well versed in the live action Disney movies in general, but wasn't there already a live action Lion King? Is this a sequel? What is happening? Am I having a stroke?
Yes, you are having a stroke, Ty, but
thank God.
But no, so this is a prequel to the 2018 the live action Lion King movie. This is a story about Mufasa, Simba's dad, as he was a young lion, because everyone has been wondering what Mufasa has been up to all these years.
Okay.
I think that they should have done Lion King 1.5 instead of telling Mufasa's story, because
why not just Lion King 2?
Well, Lion King 1.5 is just Lion King, but told from Puma and Timba, or Timon and Pumbaa's perspective. It's sick.
No, I'm with you on that. I think it's probably one of the coolest concepts for a direct-to-DVD thing that Disney has ever done, and I wish they would do more stuff like that. But it's been about 20 years now. I don't think they're listening anymore. That's wild.
Yeah.
That's...
Nobody asked for this. I don't think... I think that this is going to absolutely tank at the box office.
This is going to burst the bubble.
Yeah.
If the Little Mermaid
didn't already.
They always do this thing where it feels like the MCU did this as well, where it's just like, all you need is to not have like the worst movie possible come out right now.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you have Ant-Man Quantumania coming out. It's like, okay, that's the worst movie that could have possibly been released at this point. While everyone's talking about the MCU, about the effects and stuff, like, oh yeah, let's release this. It's like, I understand movies take a long time and there's a lot of work that goes in. You can't just like at a drop of a hat, like they're like, a lot of times they are just like a, you know, train coming down the tracks. There's nothing you could do. It's getting released whether you like it or not. But not one person was like, hey, let's just pump the brakes. Like let's tell the VFX guys, they could go slow, take their time. And whenever this comes out, if it comes out 2026, 2027, whatever. But we don't need this to come out.
No. And no. Like, surely they're not getting back James Earl Jones, because that man is so old. They got to be using the AI if it is James Earl Jones, because. Can we get a confirmation on that?
Yeah, let's see here. I'll just check James Earl Jones's acting credits and see if he's in it. But I'm also curious, like, what
he's not,
was the last
he's
thing
not he... playing Mufasa.
he was, he did Darth Vader's voice in 2022, and he also did Mufasa's voice in the other
one.
So
Timon and Pumbaa are in it, so I'm thinking that it's going to be them retelling the story of Mufasa, but even then, it's just...
Big Y energy. But yeah, as Disney continues to, you know, just, I don't know. Look, they're probably going to end up making a bunch of money, and I don't want to be the guy sitting on here complaining about Disney like they care what I have to say. They don't. So let's just wrap up this show.
Yeah.
Let's just call it good. We'll let Disney have this one. I'm sure everybody's going to go see Mufasa, the Lion King, and it's going to make a, it's, I couldn't even come up with a funny line for it. A Mufasa million. That's not a good amount. Anyways, I appreciate everyone listening to my ramblings and Trent's review of Godzilla that I did question about 2 minutes into your review that this was even about Godzilla as you started going into Middle Earth and all of this extra stuff, which makes this movie sound like it's either 4 hours long or each scene is about 3 minutes. Either or sounds fire. And even if it's just the scenes of a tombstone pile driver straight into the Pyramid of Giza, I think those are cinema.
Yeah.
And that's what we do here.
I was watching that and I was like, this is what movies are made for. Just
we celebrate cinema.
The Variant Cast is made for you to listen to every single week.
Whether you like to or not,
yeah.
you made it to the end of this, so good job on you. But appreciate everyone, and I hope you have a great week, and we'll see you next time.
Deuces. Thanks for listening, guys.